So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to Review Man.
The story of the sex tape. Last Monday, the tape from Billy Kidman with Billy and Tori together. And then, of course, the franchise had his own tape on Wednesday. But we all saw the part that the franchise did not want us to see.
The discussion of his shortcomings.
I would like to tell you fans the actual rules of this Viagra and a Pole match, because I know you're thinking, my God, what's next? If you get the bottle Viagra, you can use it on your opponent. And Billy Kidman's got the bottle Viagra.
Here we go.
Now I can use it. Wait a minute. Oh, he broke that bottle. On the way down to the franchiser, and that bottle cut. Look, it cut the back of the franchise.
Now is the franchise going to take the Viagra?
Viagra all over the ring. It's over. Franchise will win it.
Kidman technically won. He got the bottle of Viagra, but the refs got distracted. Shane ended up with the Viagra. It isn't important who got the Viagra. What's important is who uses it. And Shane Douglas, I hate to mention what happened last week on tape, but he probably could do himself some good by, you know, well, I don't even take it from here.
That bottle exploded all over Billy Kidman. As a matter of fact, Kidman. Oh, that's.
I don't even want
to face first in the Viagra, and I think he's trying to. He's even choking on some.
Oh, my God, his mouth is stuffed full of Viagra.
I want to tell you, fans.
Oh, look at Tori just driving his face in the Viagra pills.
I don't even want to talk about the time Andre the Giant won one of these matches.
They need to get Elliot. Too many in there could be like an overdose. They need to get those out of his mouth.
Nothing funny about an overdose of anything.
Absolutely not.
They should pump his
stomach.
You're
exactly right. Spitting them out, fans, and Billy Kidman, and the franchise wins.
What a classic match.
It is Review Away. I am John Pollock, joined as always by Wei Ting, who has just survived 2 hours of Monday Nitro circa 2000. Wei, how are you?
Man, I feel weird. I just kind of feel like I've been touched in a sensitive area.
What?
That's how I feel. Like, it feels like I've been awkwardly touched. Like, you know, like I feel like the shock is still trying to set in, but now I just feel funny. You know, I don't feel bad. I don't feel good. I just feel funny.
Like you were randomly groped, but you don't have too much, you don't have a problem with it. It's just you don't know how to react.
Not yet. I think it's still trying to settle. Maybe I'm just more shocked.
Are you sure you don't have a heart condition?
No.
Okay.
I don't know.
Because we got to make sure we warn on people out there about heart conditions as well,
right,
as we're doing stupid angles. Now, there are two schools of thought amongst our listeners when it comes to this era of WCW. There are some people who think we spend way too much time going back to this era of WCW.
I don't think we spend enough time. I mean, excuse me. I mean, what do we spend any more time in this era than we do... I don't know. Other eras?
I don't
think we do.
I don't feel we overtly go back to this era, but it is a large... I mean, this is like 2-3 years of WCW at the culmination of the Monday Night War. So it's a very significant period, and others love when we go back to these shows. So all I'm going to say is to those people that maybe don't care for our lack of appreciation for 2000 WCW, just skip this week. Come back next week, because this is like the equivalent. This is like the worst of the worst Michael Bay films you've ever watched. You know what you're getting when you buy a ticket by this point. You know what it's going to be. Big fucking explosions and a lot of scratching your head. Well, there's going to be a lot of explosions on this show because this Nitro, I had no clue what to expect going into this when you chose this one out of the options we laid out last week. But this Nitro way, I would have to look at a larger sample size. Maybe the worst Nitro ever. I'm confident in if I had to argue with people about what was the worst Nitro ever, I would be confident saying July 31st of 2000 in Cincinnati, Ohio.
But if you were to ask somebody else what was the best Nitro ever, I would also be confident in saying July 31st, 2000, because depending on what type of lens you watch the show in, you could have a great time.
Well, we're going to find out because this was everything. This to me was everything WCW about WCW at the time. This was the most Nitro episode ever of 2000.
Well, I feel like, I mean, for anybody kind of new to, I don't know, pro wrestling.
Television.
Yeah, especially if you...
Storytelling.
People who had never really heard of the name Vince Russo before.
This is a great introductory episode.
I would simply show this 90-minute episode of Nitro to explain the genius and the notoriety of this man.
You don't need any more. Like, once you watch this, you either love him or you fall in line. This is a great representation. And this was a full 18 months, essentially, of WCW. Maybe even longer for some, as it, amazingly, did fall off the rails at this point in time. Would have a record-setting year of losses in 2000 and shortly be out of business. But this was the run-up to the end of the company as they got set for new blood rising in just a couple of weeks after this Nitro.
How long had he been in the company?
Vince Russo had come into the company in October of 1999 with Ed Ferrara. Then in January, he was relieved of that spot and sent home for a couple of months. Then came back in April. That was the notorious reset edition with Eric Bischoff. And so this would be a couple of months into the second run of Vince Russo. And he would not make it to the end in 2001. He would tap out in late 2000, but was still very much in charge of the show at this point. This was just a few weeks after the Big Bash at the Beach show, where they did that work shoot with Hulk Hogan, resulting in him leaving. And that was to set up a big angle with Booker T, but Russo kind of went into business for himself on that promo, as we have dedicated a whole podcast to in the past. So that's kind of the timeline of WCW at this point. Booker T had won the title at that show, so he was coming into this Nitro as champion for a rematch with Jeff Jarrett at New Blood Rising. You got it?
I got it.
So
I got it. It had been a while since we reviewed that show, but over the course of reviewing this episode of Nitro, a lot of those little pieces came back to me, like the moment Sting was lit on fire on top of the Jumbotron and took a dive.
Yes.
Fell 40 feet from while he was on fire.
But you know what? Not a scratch on him.
You look great.
Yeah.
For a man who's just...
The burns.
Yeah.
Walking around with a face bandage.
Yeah.
Head bandage.
Oh, boy.
Are you ready for this?
I feel like there's a lot of pressure.
I feel this is going to be a very intense episode of Review Away ahead of us.
Yes.
I will say that in the history of doing this show, I can never recall recapping any Raw, any review we have done, and that includes Nitros. I can't remember a time where I've had to pause the video so many times because I just couldn't type fast enough. Nitro was 2 hours at this point. They had contracted from three earlier in the year. But this was still a three-hour show. It was just crammed into two. The cuts on this show, I was just... My head was spinning at the end of this. Spinning.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Anytime anything like... Anytime something happened, a pinfall. Did we even get many like replays? It doesn't matter. We didn't even get that much wrestling, okay? But anytime... There's no portion to let something breathe. There's no
breathing. There was no breathing.
As soon as something happened...
To Ernest Miller's office. He's got a gimmick. Now we've got Kevin Nash. He's arriving in the building. Now we've got the entrance into the match. There's a run-in. It was just constant. Yeah. Constant of this.
Yeah,
I'm just watching my levels go out of control here.
It was...
I literally, I'm not even exaggerating here, finished this episode Saturday morning at about 8 in the morning and got a migraine after this.
Oh, yeah.
I was like bedridden after this. I'm not going to blame this fully on Nitro, but certainly partial culpability.
It really is a workout. And I'm not even like being metaphorical or anything. Like, it's a mental workout trying to follow this show because there's so much going on.
I can't believe I watch this show every single week. I watch Nitro and Thunder religiously every week. This was at the time I first started going to O'Grady's, and we'd get the first hour of Nitro on the big screen, and then, of course, 9 o'clock would hit, and we'd put Nitro on the small screen and put Raw on.
Yeah. Well, I imagine when you're within, you know, when you're living through a period, like people living through, you know, the Depression, I wonder if they knew that they were living through such terrible times.
I loved raw potatoes. They were great back in the day.
Yeah, maybe to them it was just the norm. But now you look at it, oh, okay, now in our present day, things aren't so bad. And you look back, wow, that was a terrible time.
The greatest benefactor of some of these shows, I believe, is TNA.
Why is that?
I'm sure TNA has had some rough shows in their day.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way that I can recall an impact as bad as this.
Oh, yeah. No.
TNA is so much better than WCW at its worst.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, they may never have the successes WCW once had during their peak, but they have never, to me, put a show together like this, even at the Russo worst of TNA in, like, 2007,
yeah,
for instance.
Yeah, for sure.
I could be wrong one day when we go back to look at an impact from that era.
Well, TNA is not over yet, so you can't
there's
say.
Still time. TNA is – I'm actually quite enjoying TNA of late.
There's a lot of good TNA. But this show felt like a man – okay. And you know, sometimes like on these shows, we come up with stupid ideas. Like it wouldn't be funny if we had a last man laying match where the guy who lays down wins. Well, how about, like, this guy, somebody actually thought, why don't we have a straitjacket match where the goal is for the guy to put the straitjacket on the opponent, and then he gets to beat up the opponent, and then he'll say, whenever he wants it to end, that's when
when
it'll
he gets
end.
Tired.
Yeah, when he gets bored. That's when that's
when he's
when
on the verge of a heart attack, they'll stop.
So, it's...
I give them credit. Way, in my wildest dreams, I couldn't have thought up a match like that. Like, you could put me on acid, and I don't think I could come up with a match like that.
Well, okay. It really felt like this show was, like, somebody just, like, fucking around. I'm not even trying to be insulting. Like, it felt like if somebody were to be given a million-dollar budget and say, hey, just, you know you're going to get fired. You know, like, this whole company is going to end soon. Don't worry about it. Just fuck around. Just come up with the most ridiculous, stupid TV show you could come up with. That's what this show felt like.
If you were WWF at this time, and they're on fire, and, you know, you always hear the axiom that, you know, competition makes each product better. Do you think they even looked at this as anything at this point? Because, amazingly, this show, I looked up the ratings. This still did a 2.7 on TNT. Now, I don't know how many viewers that translates to, because TNT would have been in a lot less homes than USA Network is today. But, I mean, Raw typically right now in the summer is doing 2.9s, 3.0s. But there is a difference in that. The ratings aren't exactly parallel, but still a very healthy audience.
Yeah,
but do you feel in the WWF they were still looking at WCW at this point as something that could be salvaged, that could still turn itself around? Or do you just watch this and be like, this is a joke?
I don't know if they saw that the company was going to go out of business. I think you're always curious about what the competition is offering. I mean, you know, they could have very well still bounced back. You know,
like, their audience was dwarfing ECW at this point. ECW was still on TNN on Friday nights at this point.
You mean WCW's.
WCW was dwarfing ECW's television audience.
Yeah, I think they could have always still bounced back. But I you know, the 2.7, I mean, you're talking about a time when there are just a lot more wrestling fans, period, than today. At least people watching on TV.
What was interesting, too, when I looked at these numbers, Raw did something like a 6.2 going against this show. Mm-hmm. The week before this, Nitro was off that week, and they had a Tuesday night Nitro. So Raw unopposed against Nitro. What do you figure the rating was? They did a 6.2 this week head to head. What do you think it was unopposed the week prior?
7.5?
6.2.
Really?
Same number. Unopposed and opposed.
Wow. Okay. So what does that say?
I don't know. It tells me that maybe there was just a very loyal WCW audience that weren't necessarily WWF fans.
Boy, would it suck to be one of those people. just hoping. Yeah, maybe this will be the week.
Maybe it was just this was a golden period. Maybe they thought this was the zenith of professional wrestling. They didn't have USA Network. They didn't have any historical programs to go back and watch. They had just this was it for them.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, man, they're going to put that on a poll? All right. Cincinnati, Ohio. July 31st, 2000. Started off with a nice tribute to Gordon Solie, who had passed away. A 10-bell salute with a graphic. Really the voice most associated with wrestling on the TBS Superstation. And all of the announcers did pay tribute during the show to Gordon Solie. So starting it off on a high note.
It's sad that it had to be this show.
A show that Gordon Solie, I hope he missed. We have a feature on Booker T., and I wrote down here, kisses random woman, who we would later learn was his first wife, Lavestia. Zero recollection of this woman ever existing as an attachment to Booker T. But these two were married at the time and would get divorced shortly after Booker began with the WWF the next year.
How awkward was it that his ex-wife and his future wife were on this show?
I know. Very strange. The movements from Paisley to go from the artist to Kiwi to Booker.
Mm-hmm.
Be quite the 6 degrees of, separation, I guess.
Yes.
So Booker and his wife, Lavestia, pull up in a car. Booker is hurt from this attack the prior week. Our announcers tonight are Tony Schiavone, Scott Hudson, and Mark Madden. Get set. Rev your engines.
Oh, boy.
Booker comes out to the ring, carrying a microphone. This man, there is no one in wrestling that ages more with a mustache than Booker T. He looked 45 with this mustache.
He looks younger now, actually.
He does look younger now. And comes out. What's incredible is that Booker T was pushed at the time as like this young, up-and-coming talent who had been held back. Guy was 35 at this point.
Mm. Wow.
Like that's a significant age in pro wrestling at this point. Has a bad knee. He states that they will have to kill him to take this title away from him. Says the WCW brass couldn't stop listening to the people. And then he asks the audience if they want to see Booker T against Sting tonight. The people cheer, and he says that the title match will happen tonight. But then he is interrupted by Jeff Jarrett.
What was this thing that he was saying? Like, at one point, he was cutting a promo on Jarrett or somebody, and he said the words... Like, do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
At one point, they censored this, but, like, he said...
Oh, there was so much of this on the show.
Somebody had their lips around somebody's cock so tightly.
Okay, that's what I thought it was, but after the shoulder cocking incident, I didn't want to write it down. I do recall this, and I thought he said something to that effect.
Yeah. Like, I'm not just making this up.
What a baby face.
I was waiting in your recap there to bring this up, because your recap actually made this sound like a pretty pedestrian, you know, baby face promo. But
I had to cut. I had to take a lot of notes, so there was some skimming.
I'm pretty sure he accused somebody of wrapping their lips around somebody's cock too tightly.
Well,
definitely a more risque product than
I guess so.
Than I remember.
Yeah, some wonderful verbiage for the children in the audience.
He also seemed to be doing like an impression of The Rock, you know, this entire time, like with the flashy shirt, the sunglasses, even the haircut, and all the mentioning of the people.
The bookend,
yes, of course.
A lot of comparisons to the two. Worst people to emulate at the time. But I guess if you're WCW, you don't want to go too much in that direction.
Yeah.
Jarrett comes out, who apparently was fresh off of having a shower with his clothes on, drenched drenched in water with this ugly yellow shirt and black Levi's jeans with his guitar and aviator glasses. Just a fashion disaster.
What look?
He comes out and calls them slappatory. Let me drop the bomb on your mom. Says there will be no title match tonight. The two start fighting in the aisle and then into the ring. A chair is placed in the ring. And then Booker goes for the Harlem sidekick, but in doing so injures his knee again and takes a chair shot to the head. And Jarrett wraps him up with a figure four in the ropes as the crowd is chanting, Jarrett sucks. The lights go out and out comes Sting in his wrestling gear and like a bandage covering his entire head. Like his whole head had been burnt, but the body was fine after he got torched in a human torch match. He comes out, he tears the bandage off, and he's got the paint underneath. And Schiavone confirms it is Sting. He tells Vampiro he will save the mind games for later, and if Booker is ready, he will face him tonight. Jarrett is then on the floor and is upset at this match taking place. So there is Lavestia sitting in the front row. He pushes or pulls Lavestia over the barricade and nails her with the guitar to the back.
This was it wasn't just like pro wrestling guitar shot. This was like execution style guitar shot. Like I'm going to take this woman, flip her over onto her face, pretty hard fall, and then her face is lying down. Her legs are like still propped up against the railing. I'm going to just smash my guitar over the back of this woman's head.
Had to make it look good. Scott Hudson said she got glommed.
I don't even know what that means.
Glommed.
That sounds pretty
accurate.
All
you can use to describe this. This was the end of Lavestia, I think, permanently.
Man, like in real life probably. I couldn't believe this. Like I know in this era, you know, like whatever, like attitude, all that. Yeah, Vince Russo, sure. But I just even couldn't believe I was seeing this on TV.
Trying to see what glom means. Kind of means to steal, which doesn't really fit the description here. Glom.
God.
She glommed on him like a duck on a June bug to cling with sudden suction. Maybe that's what Booker was insinuating Jarrett did to WCW Brass.
Sure. Yeah.
That was the first segment of the night. We come back. Sting tells Booker to go to the hospital with his wife. Booker apparently was torn between the health of his wife and defending his title tonight.
The best
shitty husband. No wonder this marriage ended.
The best is like, so Jeff Jarrett does this to Booker T's wife, and then they cut away to Booker T in the ring.
Oh, the worst.
His face is just like, oh no. Oh, not again.
Oh. Booker then informs Sting he will, quote, kill Jeff Jarrett. We'll kill the man.
Yeah.
Buff Bagwell comes out. He's involved in a feud with Champagne Chris Canyon, who's now going by the name Positively Canyon, doing a ripoff of Positively Page. And they are building up to New Blood Rising, where they are going to have a Judy Bagwell on a pole match. Judy comes out in a neck brace after taking a diamond cutter from Canyon and joins the commentary team.
So, already full of surprises.
This needed subtitles. Judy is asked about this match where she will be placed on a pole, and she simply responds that she doesn't understand the stipulations of the pay-per-view any more than the announcers or the viewers at home do.
Judy Bagwell, in a match that, well, I guess Candy is calling Judy, and we're sorry about this, but this is what he's calling the match, Judy Bagwell on a pole match. You are basically up as the valet.
Right.
And if your son loses, you have to be the valet of Positively Candy. You ever thought about what that means?
Well, I'm not really sure. I don't like it, that's for sure.
She's just going to show up in Vancouver and find out what the hell's going on. Judy says that Canyon has distracted Buff, and therefore he just can't concentrate as usual. This as we watch him in the ring, dancing away, as we get the theme that he is distracted. There were a series of clotheslines. Sorry, Buff Bagwell against Big Vito, folks, just to bring everyone up to
speed.
Doesn't
matter.
There were a series of clotheslines to Vito. Then Buff is paranoid that Canyon is in disguise at ringside, so he goes after a production guy, goes after a director. None of them turn out to be Canyon. There is a superplex to Vito, an underhook DDT. He gets a two count, and then Bagwell runs at the cameraman who is shooting Judy, but yells that she is all right.
Let's not forget the weakness in the neck of Buff. Hold on.
Wait a minute.
Cameraman's over here.
Oh, hang on a minute. No, Buff, come on.
That's our regular cameraman.
Good night. Hear me weak. For Pete's sake.
Bagwell then attempts a sunset flip, but Vito hooks the leg, as Matt Stryker would call it, Wembley Stadium at 3 minutes and 9 seconds. So Bagwell distracted and gets beat by Vito.
In the build to the iconic and memorable Judy Bagwell on a pole match.
And we get a sampling of the pole matches later on in this show.
Well, I will say at least Judy Bagwell seemed comfortable on commentary and seemed to be able to get her storyline points across.
Sure. Judy Bagwell, a forgotten member of the WCW iconic forces.
Only a small part of this show.
Oh, everything was a small part of this show. Ernest Miller, who was the commissioner at the time, was in his office with Queewee. Get it? He was supposed to be the pose as the gay fashion designer for WCW with a name that would closely sound like queer.
Okay. I and also Kiwi. Because wasn't he the...
He was Kiwi, and then they thought that wasn't blatant enough, so they changed it to Queewee.
Ah,
gotcha. This was Alan Funk, who came out of the power plant.
This was supposed to be a ripoff of Chris Kattan's Mango character, right?
Yes. And then with the gimmick that he's an effeminate character that when the bell rings is a ass kicker.
Oh, yeah. He gets all masculine.
So he wants a match tonight with the artist. He ends up hitting Ernest Miller with his shoe, then laughs... And Queewee starts snapping at him and cuts a big promo, and Ernest Miller makes the match with the artist and Queewee for later tonight.
I feel like we're just glossing over some of these points because the whole show is so ridiculous. But he threatened Ernest Miller here with a shoe.
Just kind of Ernest Miller's gimmick was the shoes, right? The red shoes.
Yeah, but he didn't threaten people with shoes. He held up a shoe... Like it was a gun or a knife at Ernest Miller.
Well, standards and practices, this is all they could allow at the time. Drive-by shoeing.
All right.
Pamela Paulshock, who was horrendous. Just a horrible, backstage interviewer.
In the context of this show, she might as well have been Jim Ross. She's great.
On a show that was honoring Gordon Solie, this was not honoring his memory. She is with Canyon and explains how Judy Bagwell is up for grabs at the pay-per-view. Wants Judy to be the new Kimberly when he wins her and possibly make her a Nitro girl. And then Pamela gives the follow-up question, if Canyon cutting all these women, does this make you feel like a man? And he goes to attack Pamela when in runs Mean Gene Okerlund for the save. And poor Gene takes the Canyon cutter right on the cement floor.
Cut to commercial.
Come back. Time has stood still. And Buff Bagwell makes it to the back and finds Gene down. And he says, where is Canyon? And during the entire commercial break, Canyon had walked about 10 steps away from the interview position. And Canyon is attacked by Buff Bagwell with a DDT. Massive DDT onto the floor. Cut to Sting. He's now searching for Jeff Jarrett. Like, zero time to even digest what we have just seen.
Yeah. It was that. It was also the idea that a man so upset would execute a DDT in a street fight.
A double underhook DDT.
Yeah, and that's what anybody would do in a brawl. Not only did he do a DDT, he did the DDT, and then he yelled, bang!
$29.95 for this pay-per-view. Sting is with his bat looking for Jeff Jarrett. Then the artist comes out with Paisley, and he has a new look. He's wearing jeans and a t-shirt, which Tony Schiavone identifies as hardcore attire. They are feuding with Kiwi because apparently Paisley has started to have some interest in Kiwi, has eyes for the man. So we have a match between these two.
This is Kiwi's in-ring debut.
Yes. There's a Thez press by Kiwi and gets pulled off by the referee. Mark Madden just goes crazy here, calling the action. The gimmick is here, he is the wardrobe guy for WCW making his in-ring debut.
Yeah.
Kiwi fires up on him. Delivers a drop toe hold, and then is striking him to the side of the head. There's a bridging German by the artist for a two count, a back suplex by Kiwi for a two count. Then a tilt-a-whirl where the artist is dropped on his chest, and Kiwi pins him at 316. They show Paisley looking impressed, and then Kiwi tells the boys in the back not to make him angry as his voice changes.
Yes. No, he looked all right in ring, you know? Decent.
This was fine.
But, man, Madden was just... He's just so... way too overbearing on commentary. And everything he says, it just sounds like he's mocking the
show. It sounds like it's you're watching, like, YouTube commentary of a show.
It sounds like a guy, like Mystery Science Theater.
It's tongue-in-cheek commentary.
Yeah, even though I've never seen Mystery Science Theater. But, like, the idea is, like... He sounds like a fake commentator making fun of the show.
It's closer to Stranglemania with ICP.
Yeah, exactly. Although watching some of this, I guess you can't help but make fun of it.
Scott Steiner is with Medasia, his head freak, and they go into the cat's office. He tosses a security guy against the wall, and he comes in with a pipe, and he wants a title match tonight. Miller says that Booker already has a pipe match with him. In the back of the building.
No. He already has a title match with Sting.
Title match with Sting already. So that's already happening. He also mentions that Booker has left the arena. Scott Steiner does not have any concern about this. Kevin Nash and his hair arrive in the back. Then we see Norman Smiley hitting on Medasia, and then Scott Steiner comes out from the side of the shot and just attacks him with his pipe, laying out Norman. Then we go to MIA, the Misfits in Action, with Pamela. They declare war on Canada, and they are going to so severely injure Lance Storm that he will be unable to have children and infiltrate the world. And General Rection gives a pep talk to the members of the group, including Lieutenant Loco and Major Guns, who will have a hardcore women's match with Miss Hancock. Yes, yeah. We have characters in this show named Miss Hancock and General Rection. Erection.
Uh-huh. No. Hugh G. Rection. That's his full name.
He went from humorous to huge erection to general rection.
Yeah.
Many, many different iterations of the Bill DeMott character.
Mm-hmm.
Lance Storm comes out. They show a confrontation, and I use that term lightly, that he had with Mike Awesome at the Nitro Grill, where they passed one another and exchanged words, but we didn't get the sound. This has led to a pay-per-view match between the two for the United States title. This disagreement that they had at the Nitro Grill.
Ugh.
Lance Storm comes into the ring. He won the hardcore title the previous week. He says people in Calgary thinks hardcore wrestling is garbage, and he is renaming it the Saskatchewan Hardcore International title. The shit title.
Oh, right. Yeah, didn't even...
Which they originally wanted to name the Stu Hart International title, and Lance Storm vetoed that idea.
Oh, wow.
What a great concept for your title. This is the shit title.
The Stu Hart International title. The shit title. That's funny.
Madden points out the acronym, and Lance says he wants to rename WCW World Canadian Wrestling. The Canadians have dominated this sport. He has defeated the champions with ease, and he goes to play the Canadian national anthem when he is cut off by MIA. And we've got Lieutenant Loco defending the cruiserweight title against Lance Storm. And we got an update on Booker's wife. She's been taken to hospital. She's resting comfortably, and Booker is on his way back to the arena. to take care of his number one priority. There is a tilt-a-whirl leg scissors to Storm. Drop kicks Loco off the apron to the floor. Shivani then informs Rexion and Cajun that their mics are not working as they are on the commentary table. I mean, we have five announcers for this particular match. Loco lands on his left ankle and starts selling it, and Lance Storm starts attacking the ankle. Cajun says they should pump the fat out of Mark Madden's stomach midway through the match as Madden is supporting Lance Storm. Storm then slips on the mat, which a lot of guys used to have problems with because of that big logo on the ring that was constantly guys slipping on it. Storm blocks a Hurricane Rana, applies the Maple Leaf onto the bad ankle, wins the title at 3:22 as Madden yells hat trick. So Lance Storm now has the U.S. title, Cruiserweight title, and the shit title.
Now, I don't know how much build there was for this Cruiserweight title match, but it couldn't help but feel like there was very little fanfare with all of these title changes. Like, was there any type of build for this Cruiserweight title match?
Not that I know of. I think it was just impromptu. This was the big Lance push, though, in WCW, where he won three titles in a row and then challenged Booker T. And the idea was he's going to win every title in WCW. This was really the peak of Lance Storm's WCW run.
Oh, it was huge. I mean, especially considering what would follow right after this title.
Oh, I do mean this holding the title up was the peak, and a minute later was the beginning of the end. Because as we have put these three titles on Lance Storm, trying to introduce this new character as a threat, what is the best way to really endorse him in that role? Kevin Nash comes out. Lance Storm stands up to him and tells Storm to leave. Kevin Nash boots him in the face as Nash has a promo to cut.
Man.
This was stupid.
Oh, God.
Why couldn't this have been Lieutenant Loco just selling his ankle? Why couldn't this have been any other guy on the roster?
Why didn't it have to be anybody?
Why couldn't he have just walked out and cut a promo? I don't know, Way. I just don't know.
Give your guy three belts, the three belts in your company that aren't the championship belt, and then just to be...
Like, could you imagine Hunter just walking out on Raw to cut a promo and he pedigrees Rusev to get him out of the way?
I can totally imagine that, actually. It's a bad example.
This is amazing. This promo was amazing.
There's a saying in professional wrestling, when two guys exchange words and they say they work themselves into a shoot.
He's got a live mic on Nitro.
Ain't it great?
What next?
It's a dangerous thing here.
I watched the comments last week that Bill Goldberg made towards me. I've been doing this now for 12 years. And in those 12 years, there's only one time that I wasn't a professional in this ring. There was a Canadian guy when I was up in the World Wrestling Federation that decided it wasn't my night because we were in Montreal and it was his hometown. So the next night in Quebec City, I beat his ass and beat him in the middle.
I think we remember that.
So Kevin Nash, we come back from break. So we had a commercial break where we could have had Nash then come out at the end, after the commercial break. Nash talks about how there's a saying in pro wrestling, how the boys sometimes can work themselves into a shoot. He says there was one time in his career he wasn't professional in the ring, and it was a time in the WWF with a Canadian wrestler in his hometown, where one night this wrestler decided he wasn't going to lose in his hometown. So the next night in Quebec City, Nash beat his ass in the ring.
And who was he referring to?
You don't remember?
No.
Because Scott Hudson said, I think we remember that.
No.
I can guarantee you, I was 16 years old at the time this show would have aired. I 100% watched this episode. And I was someone who, I was on the internet. I considered myself somewhat knowledgeable about behind-the-scenes stuff. I had no idea what the story was. I would imagine 99% of the people watching this promo had no idea about this story, which would come out years later involving Pierre-Carl Ouellette. And this was a famous story. They actually worked an indie show in Quebec off of this
Nash?
Actual incident. Nash and Pierre-Carl Ouellette. But what was the backdrop of this promo? It was that... anyway, let's just continue.
Work shoots. It's to show that Nash can shoot, just like Bill Goldberg in his promo.
So he says... So he's got this three-way coming up at New Blood Rising, which maybe the greatest build in WCW history was this three-way with Kevin Nash, Bill Goldberg, and Scott Steiner, where they built it up on television that it was going to be a shoot match, insinuating everything else is a work. He then made this, like, vague, like, comparison of the fact that he came up playing basketball, Bill Goldberg came up playing football, and that in football, you're more likely to slap each other on the ass more than basketball. So the subtext was that football is gay, basketball is red-blooded American heterosexual sporting.
Now, before I got into this business, yeah, Goldberg, I might have played some basketball, but I wasn't holding anybody's hands. If I watch enough sports... If anybody's patting anybody's asses, it's the football players.
Here we go.
I think we're drawing the battle lines.
Well, he actually talked about how it wasn't just basketball, but the fact that he when he wasn't playing basketball, he was a bouncer. And a bouncer he was used to kicking football players out of bars. And so he
did state, I am not a wrestler. He said, I'm a fighter.
Yeah, he's a fighter.
And he might not be professional at the pay-per-view. And just for shits and giggles, added in that I will not stop in my quest to get Scott Hall back on television.
What a promo.
This was mind-boggling. This was so symptomatic of what WCW was at the time. Just give a live microphone. And like, this Scott Hall thing was building to nothing. This was, I can guarantee you, that was not part of this at all. Sadly, the rest of this probably was the plan for this promo. Like, what do you take away from this other than, okay, everything on this show is bullshit, but this guy is going to have a real fight on a pay-per-view with these guys?
Yeah. I didn't really take anything away from it. I was disinterested, to be honest with you.
You know what the biggest problem I find is? I know a lot of people... Just they think there's nothing of value Vince Russo can provide pro wrestling. And I will disagree on that part because there was a time I very much enjoyed when Vince Russo put together the Raw magazine and he was writing for the magazines because I would read them and they were closer to they responded to the internet at the time and writing about guys out of character and interviews. And it fit in this forum. And the problem was... They wanted to take that and move it into the television product, and they had a balance of that in the WWF. And when we went to WCW, it was now an imbalance of that, where this just did not work, where you had a guy like Kevin Nash. If he were to go on Dave Meltzer's radio show at this time and talk about this Pierre-Carl Ouellette story, it would probably be a fascinating story, and it would work in that medium. On a pro wrestling television show... Completely just, I can't make any sense of it. It just seems so out of place.
Yeah.
It'd be like watching, I watched Dawn of the Planet of the Apes last week, Way.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be the equivalent of the heel ape.
Caesar.
Caesar was the good guy. What was his name? It was shit. I'm drawing a blank on the guy's name. It doesn't matter. Where he would just stop. Let's just say it was Caesar, okay? And Andy Serkis stops midway through the scene and says, just so you know, we switched directors from the last Planet of the Apes, and my character would never say this dialogue that I'm about to say. These are Andy Serkis's feelings on the whole thing.
In the form of a monkey.
Yes.
You know what? I understand, you know, we've talked about this, but, like, I understand where he was getting at. It was a time where the internet was becoming more and more, I don't know, influential on the typical wrestling fan, and I feel like he probably wanted to kind of get the jump and do something about it. How do we capitalize on this?
And there's a way to do that. There's a way, like, I personally think, you know, this WWE network, mm-hmm. you could probably gain a lot by trying to cater things more to that audience. I don't doubt that if I was the WWE network right now and I'm desperate for ideas, I wouldn't mind hearing some ideas from Vince Russo, who no. always thought out of the box.
Yeah, I don't know.
For programming that. Ideas.
You have a lot of people who could think.
I don't want him to write a television show. I've seen enough of it.
Nah, yeah. I don't know.
You have no need for him.
I just think there's so many other people probably at this point more qualified than him.
It might be. But I will tell you that I think his ideas that he brought to the magazine, I thought were great. I thought that was an evolutionary process of that form of that magazine, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
But this just became, well, all of our audience must be on the internet, and they're up on their Pierre Carl Ouellette shoot stories from a house show in 1995.
I just do you remember how this match actually played out? Like whether or not they actually teased portions that were to be shoots? How would they even do that?
From my recollection, it was something like Goldberg went against the script, and that was how the match ended.
Okay, so I'm going to Irish whip you right now. This is all fake.
He's not working with
him. And then at some point, Goldberg just says, I'm not going to jump for your suplex.
They literally had this interview that they teased later with Vince Russo. In that interview, he actually says that of these three people in this match, I trust that two of them are going to follow the script, and I don't know about the other.
Oh, wow.
Like, this is a work. Fuck!
Hey, you know, I'm glad it exists if only to show that, like, the people of the future, that this simply did not work. Because I'm sure at some point somebody else would have tried the same thing.
I don't know how many promotion. People have learned from stuff like this.
Uh-huh. Well, certainly, I don't think anybody's done it to this extent, this blatant extent. You know, bring the observer out to the ring. Oh, actually, that was in the past, wasn't it? When Hogan did that?
Yeah, that's the they did sheet. That years ago.
Anyway,
this was just a perplexing promo. For those curious, Scott Hall never appeared on WCW again before they went out of business. So Scott Steiner comes out during this segment with a pipe. Says he is not going to shove this pipe up Kevin Nash's ass because they're both from Detroit. So they start fighting, sans pipe. Then we cut to Nash and Kat's office.
Hey, I saw a cameo from Braden Walker, Chris Harris here.
Oh, was he one of the security guys?
Yeah, he was.
Oh. Longer appearance here than he had in his whole ECW run.
Probably.
Braden Walker. So now Kevin Nash is in Ernest Miller's office and he wants a match with Scott Steiner. He says, someone is going to die tonight. It seemed to be their big hook, teasing death. And Miller just happens to have a straitjacket behind his desk. So he pulls it out and he announces, we're going to have a straitjacket match tonight where the goal is to put your opponent in a straitjacket and beat him until you get exhausted.
Here, go have a straitjacket match.
What the hell is this?
Listen, put him in there and beat his ass until you get tired. That's how you win.
How do you come up with this stuff?
I don't know. But just the laziness in how they got to this stipulation is the best part. I happen to have these random straitjackets lying around my office.
This became a running joke where he just had all these gimmicks behind his table. They just pull up and out of nowhere. Well, it's going to be a this match,
match
or that match.
Yeah, I got a white piece of cardboard here.
The goal is to put the cardboard onto the back of your opponent and then pin him with the cardboard on top of his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Jarrett comes out and he calls out Sting for just an impromptu match. This is the first time we have seen Sting's face since the horrific burn at the Great American Bash, Shivani informs us. So yeah. Let's recap. It's been almost 2 months since Sting has been seen. And this was the reveal after all these weeks and weeks of if Sting is alive. if he's been burnt to death.
This man was on top of a 40-foot tall Titantron, lit on fire, forcing him to fall off of the Titantron onto the stage.
Yeah, give no credence to the fact he fell 40 feet.
Yeah.
He was also on fire during this time, and he's about to have two matches in one night here in his comeback. Oh, this promotion just sucked. How can you possibly enjoy this? How can you, unless you just grew up with this and there's a certain romanticizing this period of wrestling that you grew up on, I don't understand how you can defend this show. Like, what positive...
Well, you know what?
This is all nostalgia, if you like
this. No, this show, I disagree. This show would have done well, really well, if you put it on, like, Adult Swim. Like, next to, like, the Robot Chicken or whatever, Tim and Eric, like shows that just, like, promote randomness, you know? Like, random humor, random, bizarre, nonsensical humor. I think this show would have been great.
I cannot fathom how after this show you were committed to giving $30 to these people.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't do that.
I can't believe New Blood Rising did a buy.
Yeah.
And sadly, I paid $30 for that show.
Well, then you should ask yourself.
I cry in the back of my head at this point.
Why did you pay for it?
I have no clue, because I bought everything at this time. Way I watched wrestling like a maniac during this time period.
Well, then there you go. What reason do they have to change?
Well, Way, there was a depleting group of us that were continuing to buy this month after month. It was a very steady decline that if they paid any attention to, they might have thought, hey, this is not going well.
You shouldn't feel bad. I mean, you know, like...
I'm embarrassed. I feel more embarrassed than sad.
You made a career out of it. Now you've actually gotten some value. You know, this is you getting the value right now. I'm talking about this show.
What's crazy is we had the comparison point to WWF at the time. Many look at 2000 as their strongest year of week-to-week episodic television as well. Mm-hmm. And were you even watching WCW at this time?
No, I don't think so.
You're such a wise man.
I don't know if I'm wise.
You knew.
No, dude.
You knew better.
I'm just normal.
Sorry.
Not to say you're right. Yeah, no, but you are. You admit to yourself that you are abnormal, but I'm not going to watch something that I have no interest in. I didn't have any interest.
So Jeff Jarrett and Sting in a straight up match. There was a face buster by Sting,
That's what you think.
He missed a splash in the corner, clotheslines Jarrett to the floor, and they fight around the ring with Jarrett sent into the barricade. Sting then grabs a chair and attacks him with it into the ribs. They go near the entrance. Then they return to the ring. Jarrett crotches Sting as they re-enter the ring with the rope, wraps his knee around the post, and applies a figure four in the ropes. And Madden then asks, why does he have to break the hold at four? And Scott Hudson responds with, well, it's a five count, as if this is, like, completely logical, given we just watched Sting beat this man with a chair.
Yeah.
Jarrett then goes for the chair. Mickey J comes from behind, and Jarrett low blows Mickey J. This did not constitute a DQ. He then attacks Sting with a chair, and Mickey J counts two. Then
he counted for the guy who low-blowed him.
He counted it for the man who just hit him in the nuts. Then Sting has the chairs on the floor, and Sting hits a scorpion death drop right near the chair. We were supposed to believe that the back of Jarrett's head connected with this chair. That, too, was not a disqualification. No, that led to the pinfall as Sting beats Jeff Jarrett, who, let's not forget, is headlining the next pay-per-view for the title, loses to Sting as clean as a WCW Monday Nitro match could be at this point in time.
Let's also not forget that Sting has a title match tonight. Like, why would he come out for this?
Sting is limping after the match, so the storyline is that both Booker and Sting have bad or are limping into the main event.
That was the whole purpose of this segment?
To establish that both have bad knees and ankles.
Okay.
An ambulance is seen leaving the arena as Booker returns.
Who was in the ambulance?
We never found out.
I'd assume the wife.
No, the wife had been taken to the hospital at this point.
Oh, so who?
This was another ambulance leaving. They insinuated it was Jeff Jarrett.
Oh, Jarrett.
But never flat out stated that.
Why? From the chair?
Yes.
That's
head trauma. Okay. Booker returns and he asks Terry Taylor where Jeff Jarrett is, and Taylor describes what Sting just did to him as sweet and says he thinks that Jarrett just left in that ambulance. Sean Stasiak and Chuck Palumbo came out just to confirm that there was no drug testing at this point in time in WCW's tenure. Schiavone notes the passing of Gordon Solie and how he put wrestling at 605 on the map. Then out comes Chronic with their Chronic-inspired shirts that read, "It's all about Chronic" and "Chronic 419.
419.
Meaning they're just under 420. So they're low. They're not high.
Okay. So does that mean they're not?
I took this to mean that their testosterone levels were 4.19 level of nanograms per deciliters above the normal level. Chronic took on Vampiro and the Great Muta, who was having a run here in WCW during this wonderful summer, against Sean O'Hare and Mark Jindrak. Three-way for the tag titles, with Stasiak and Palumbo on commentary. Mm-hmm. You got all your players in order here.
Were they all together? Were they still the, what is it, the fucking, the four guys, the...
The Natural Born Thrillers, yeah. They hadn't been formed yet.
Oh, okay.
This was pre-Natural Born Thrillers. Stasiak and Palumbo call Chronic one-dimensional meatheads. Madden can't tell who Jindrak is from O'Hare. Stasiak and Palumbo run them down as green, with one being a basketball washout. Tremendous endorsement. There was a urinagi by Brian Clark to Mark Jindrak. Muta came in for his Muta elbow to Clark. And Madden says that Muta is going off like a prom dress. Vampiro and Muta then work over Brian Clark. Clark gets sent into the corner, stumbles backwards, and the back of his head cracks into the face of Vampiro. This was tremendously awkward. Vampiro looked like he was dazed from this backwards headbutt from Clark. There's a full Nelson slam by Adams to Muta. Then O'Hare super kicks Adams, dragon screw leg whip, and then a leg lock applied by Muta to Brian Adams. Clark then attacks Muta with a chair. Jindrak leaps onto the top rope with a hurricanrana that looked impressive to Vampiro, followed by a swanton bomb, or the shanton bomb, by O'Hare, and then goes for the pin, but Adams pins Muta before O'Hare can pin Vampiro. So Chronic wins at 5:18. I thought this was just a mess, despite some bright spots in the match.
It was just a bunch of guys in there delivering.
Too much going on here.
Delivering their finishers and then some chair shots. It was all very confusing.
We had six guys in the ring and five guys on commentary. You never need 11 people encompassing one match. It's too much. Chronic started arguing with O'Hare and Jindrak, attacked them with the belts. Muta hit him with the mist, which the commentators identified as scope, and then Vampiro and Muta posed with the title belts. Then the show picked up, because we go to Shane Douglas with Torrie Wilson in the Cat's office, and this time he pulls out from behind the desk a bottle of Viagra. They are going to have a Viagra on a pole match with Billy Kidman, and Shane is not happy about this.
Well, explain the storyline.
Well, to their credit, they did put together a 30-second video package to explain why these two pro wrestlers are having a Viagra on a pole match. Because you see, Billy Kidman was aligned with Torrie Wilson, and during this time, they had a sex tape, which, to their credit, this was before the sex tape craze.
Oh, is that right?
Among celebrities.
Oh, I mean, Pam Anderson.
That's true. That's true. This was post Tommy Lee and Pamela Anderson. So they had a sex tape. And this aired on Nitro.
Oh, so, the sex tape.
Yes, yes. Then Shane Douglas, who is now with Torrie after Torrie turned on Kidman, he wanted to create his own sex tape with Torrie Wilson. Unfortunately, he could not get an erection. He could not get a general erection.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, this has led to the Viagra on a pole match.
I'm surprised this wasn't on pay-per-view. That build, that classic build. The sex tape build, yes.
if ever there is a soundbite or a description of a match that needs to be accompanying Tony Schiavone and the legacy of his broadcasting career, it is him laughing through the description of this match and how you win it.
How do you win it?
You grab the oversized bottle of Viagra pills, which were labeled in giant block letters, Viagra. Mm-hmm. And then you can, I assume, beat your opponent with the bottle of pills.
Yeah, that's what Schiavone thought. You really just have to grab the bottle of pills. Anyway.
What was so great about this was, as I was watching this match, they cut to a shot of the giant bottle of pills. So I immediately took a screen grab and cropped it and sent it to you, because I was like, this has to be the photo. And then I checked, and you had already gotten the exact same image for the logo this week.
Yeah.
We thought alike. So Shane Douglas, prior to the match, we had about 8 segments to get us set for this match. Booker is thanking Sting for taking out Jeff Jarrett, and they agree they are still on for tonight's title match. Pamela Paulshock is then with O'Hare and Jindrak. Pamela, terrible. O'Hare and Jindrak, first day wrestling school promos.
Jindrak and O'Hare, tonight Chronic stole the title right out from under you guys in a 3-way dance.
Chronic, we may be new, but we're not dumb. What you did tonight is a bunch of crap. We're all about paying our dues here in the WCW, but nobody takes advantage of us. Chronic, listen closely. This isn't over by a long shot.
Then we got the recap of Thunder from last week with the setup for the sex tape. Douglas is then in the ring. He points to the large pole and calls Kidman a son of a bitch. I'm imagining the large pole as a double entendre here for the Viagra on a pole match.
Hmm.
This was a very big pole, I thought.
Okay.
Schiavone is just openly mocking the concept of this match. This guy was on autopilot. Like, this guy who had called the original Starcades, Jim Crockett Promotions, seen some revolutionary pro wrestling at the time in the mid-80s. Like, this had no connection to that form of pro wrestling that this man came up on.
Mm-hmm.
This was just, as long as the zeros come on the check,
mm-hmm,
consider me in. Shane Douglas, Billy Kidman, the Viagra on a pole match. This was Mark Madden's specialty, where he just got to bring up historical names, ironic comparisons that legends such as Lou Thesz, Pat O'Connor, Giant Baba, and Johnny Ace had been in these matches because they all needed Viagra. Johnny Ace, of course, was a road agent for WCW at the time. Mentions the Inoki Ali match, which was also a Viagra on a pole match. Torrey trips Kidman from the floor, and Schiavone says that says there is actually serious heat between these two. They cut to the giant bottle of Viagra pills. Shane hits the Pittsburgh plunge to Kidman, but then there is a powerbomb by Kidman out of the corner. Torrey then distracts Kidman, but he is still able to hit the Kidman Akazi. The worst play on words for a move I can recall. Kidman climbs up, gets the Viagra as the fans cheer this, but then walks into a jawbreaker, and the bottle breaks on Kidman's jaw as it gets caught between Shane's shoulder and Kidman's jaw. And Shane grabs the bottle. The referee this whole time has been distracted by Torrey on the apron, so he turns around to see Shane holding the bottle of Viagra pills, and Shane Douglas triumphs in the first and last Viagra on a pole match. He has won Viagra.
They start shoving pills into Kidman's mouth.
Yes. The announcers yell, "It's not important who gets the Viagra, but who uses it." The bottle has exploded over Kidman, and Tony Schiavone goes into serious mode, concerned that Kidman is overdosing on these pills. He is treating this like a man has been paralyzed in the ring. The same amount of levity is delivered in this description by Tony Schiavone, channeling his Walter Cronkite delivery.
Mm-hmm. My favorite, though, when the segment ends, finally, Schiavone just says, "Well, folks, coming up to follow this Viagra match,
We have a women's hardcore match. That's right. This is Nitro.
Cut the break. As if we needed a reminder of what show is providing us this content.
This whole episode played out like a 90-minute version of Botchamania to me.
I can't say I was looking at my clock or that I was bored. There was so much happening. So much happening. Mm-hmm. Major Guns and Miss Hancock are getting ready. Kevin Nash is then shown playing with the straitjacket in his locker room. Hancock, Stacy Keibler for the uninitiated, walk into Major Gunn's locker room, shoves her onto a couch, and they begin fighting. And this is the beginning of their hardcore match. They go into a shower. There is food shoved into each other's mouth. There is cake in the face. Gunn keeps referring to Hancock as a wench. Then we cut to David Flair and AWOL fighting in the ring. I thought there was a problem with the video file. No, this was just too... There was just not enough time for all these conflicts to come to a resolution. We had to have two matches at the same fucking time.
Yeah, I don't know what the point of that was. Why were they out?
Ugh. AWOL gets a table into the ring. The girls then make their way out to the ring. Gunn gets Irish whipped into a table in the corner, and Miss Hancock wins the match after hitting a scoop slam and pinning Guns, tears her shirt off, and then we're informed this is nothing compared to what you'll see on the pay-per-view when they have a rip-off-the-clothes match at New Blood Rising.
Oh, man.
This is the tune-up. ROTC match.
Yeah, dude. I don't know, man. I feel like... I suppose, you know, say what you want about, like, Attitude Era, but I just feel like there are some definitely, like, deep-rooted women issues here in the writing of some of these shows. You know what I mean?
You have issue with a woman being named Miss Hancock?
No, just not even that. Just, you know, guitar shot on Booker's wife, you know, having a women's hardcore match where what did we see them do? We saw them brawl in the shower, we saw them get wet, and then we basically saw food fights and... calling each other wenches and all that shit.
White icing cake in the face.
Bro,
I want you to hit her with the cake. I want it to look like a facial has been performed backstage onto Miss Hancock via sperm.
Yeah.
That was probably the delivery.
Mm-hmm. Done it just like that.
Oh, this show. Am I being too harsh?
No, you're being great. I just feel like I don't have to say... There's nothing I can't say. I feel
you can say everything.
No, I mean the descriptions say it all for themselves. I don't really have anything to add.
Like, I'm stunned this exists. So glad it does. I'm glad this is out there for future knowledge. But I just cannot... I can't fathom that this happened.
It did happen. It's like the Holocaust.
Oh, wait. Hancock, what happened after this? I'm lost here, Way.
Kidman is in the back.
Oh, Booker was getting ready. We cut to Sting, who's taking his boots off. He's taking his wrestling boots off to emphasize we're getting ready for the main event. Like, even that didn't make sense to me. Why was that showing?
His knee hurts, oh. I guess.
So Kidman approaches the Nitro girls.
Hi.
Hello, ladies.
What do you say? Take us back to the hotel with you. Please.
I don't know, girls. I've been having kind of a hard day.
Yeah, we can tell.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You guys want a ride?
Yeah, we'd love a ride.
Well, let's go.
Billy Kidman in the Nitro girl. I hope Billy Kidman doesn't have a heart condition. If you have a heart condition, you shouldn't take those Viagra.
I think he's going for the six-man tag title tonight.
Where was my little lamb chop baby going with him? Nitro girl baby. Those girls are tramps.
It's over, Mark.
Fans, if you have a heart condition, do not take that pill. But Billy Kidman, the recipient of... He was a loser of the Viagra LaPole match, but...
He's a winner in life.
He's a winner in life. Very
Let's
good.
Get serious.
These three women... I'm not even exaggerating here. Basically say, can we go have an orgy at the hotel? To which Kidman responds, I'm having a bit of a hard day, as he looks down at his dick. And Shivani says, I hope he's not having a heart condition. Madden calls them tramps, And Shivani then legit does a PSA on how you should not take more pills than you're prescribed because you could have a heart condition. I guarantee you, Wei, that the, when this was presented, there were people at Time Warner who said, if you're going to do an angle involving all of these pills, you have to give a PSA about the dangers of overtaking pills.
Sure.
I guarantee you they had to crowbar this announcement in there because it sounded so awkward that they had to repeatedly mention the dangers of taking pills if you have a bad heart.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because it was so important that we have this angle that we do need to warn people as well. Because we've got to get this angle on TV.
I always like my medical advice along with double entendres, like I'm having a hard night. Just this poor Billy Kidman, you know, having to read this dialogue that this guy came up with. Like
this scene would have fit into any porn you had seen.
Oh, no, no. Porn dialogue is way more inspired than this. Billy Kidman had to say, you want a ride? Man, these Nitro girls, too, they get into this to be dancers and then to
they're tramps, according to Madden.
Well, to just like be a part of this scene where it's just not even clever, uncomfortable dick jokes. Because the joke is Billy Kidman had took all this Viagra in the match. Therefore, he's got a giant boner, and girls can't resist that.
So this jawbreaker forced him to digest all this Viagra.
Yeah.
Wouldn't want that erection to go to a waste, would you?
Makes sense.
Yeah. He's having a shooting star.
Oh, God.
Straight jacket matches up next. Scott Steiner against Kevin Nash. Steiner cuts a promo on Nash and Goldberg, and he somehow turned this into a promo about how women can do the 69er with Scotty Steiner. This, too, was censored. You had to read the lips.
You just have to know how much... All these guys, it feels like it... We just need to know how much sex everybody's having. This is how...
This is a testosterone-fueled roster.
This is why they're good wrestlers, because they have a lot of sex.
The best censoring on this whole show was Mark Madden talking about how Scott Steiner was going to beat the bejesus out of somebody, and bejesus got censored.
Great.
I guess because it had some religious connotation to it by saying bejesus. No bell rings. The match just starts. Nash hits a side slam and goes for a pin, which was awesome. There was no referee in the match. There was no count. These two just looked like fools here. Medeja then distracts Kevin Nash, who gets low-blowed. Then Shivani plugs that coming up on Thunder, we're going to have an in-depth interview with Vince Russo. And then Shivani plugs the three-way at the pay-per-view, stating that this match has the interest of, quote, the internet. Steiner gets the heat until Nash stops him in the corner and punches him on top. Hudson says that this match may not end till 4 in the morning. I could only fear. There is a chokeslam delivered to Steiner. Then Medeja comes from behind with a weak chair shot to the back of Nash, who turns around and power bombs Medeja. Then Rick Steiner runs in and attacks Nash. He runs into a big boot from Nash, but then this allows Scott to hit Nash with a chair shot, applies the Steiner recliner as Rick Steiner helps him put on the straight jacket, and then they stand up, and Scott's music just plays as Medeja is still out cold, and Nash has been placed into the straitjacket, and apparently this told us that Scott Steiner was so exhausted he wasn't even going to proceed to even try to beat down on Kevin Nash while he was subdued in the straitjacket.
So the announcers spend all this time, this entire match, building up the idea that not only is it the object of the match to put your straitjacket on the opponent, but the match doesn't end until you want it to. So the whole appeal of this is to see what type of beatdown we're going to get from, you know, the guy who wins. And then Steiner just puts the jacket on and leaves. It was just... The announcers had to fumble, basically, afterwards for an explanation about why they sound so stupid. You know, because clearly Steiner just assumed you put the jacket on and then the match is over. Whoever assumed that, because they just played the music after the jacket was on. It just screamed of terrible miscommunication between the announcers and the talent. And, man,
now,
what a train wreck.
Now, based on the promo from Nash earlier, were you supposed to leave this match with the feeling that Scott Steiner has beaten Kevin Nash and is the favorite going into the three-way? Or were you supposed to leave with the idea that Kevin Nash was a professional in this match and put over Scott Steiner and is therefore going to be most dangerous at the pay-per-view? Were we supposed to know this is a work? Because that's how Nash outlined it earlier.
I honestly don't. I don't have the brain power to think that deeply about this, because clearly no effort was put into the creation of this.
This is how you navigate the matrix that was WCW in 2000. You got to think like this. I'm trying to get into their head of what they were trying to accomplish with the promo and what this match was supposed to be leaving me with the impression of. Final match of the night. Felt like the eighth hour here of Nitro. Booker T and Sting for the WCW title. Let's cap off the show with a 5-minute title match. Madden was very upset that they shook hands to start the match. Sting goes for the Scorpion Deathlock very early on, but Booker makes it to the ropes. Hudson mentions the Bunkhouse Lights Out match from last week on Thunder. This was also going to take place next week. On Nitro, they would have Sting against Scott Steiner in a pipe on a pole match. That's next week's Nitro to get you ready for the pay-per-view.
A pole on a pole.
Pole on a pole match.
Yeah.
There's a double cross body in the middle of the ring. Sting then rolls to the floor. He gets dragged under the ring by a mysterious white arm who then shoves Sting out, and he's bleeding. Let's recap this. Sting was sent to the floor. He is pulled under the ring where we are led to believe he is attacked and bloodied and beaten. So Sting is then thrown out, and what does this lead to? Sting firing up and making a comeback on Booker. It's like he got new life via this beating underneath the ring. He was not out cold. He was not unconscious. No, he was rejuvenated from this bloody beatdown.
Nor does he go after the guy who just beat him.
No, he goes back to the fucking ring.
And is still under the ring.
Didn't get counted out. He's fine. Booker then counters the death drop and hits the bookend and pins Sting after the Sting comeback and pins him at 5'11 and then clutches his knee after the match. But we're not done there, folks. Sting now goes back under the ring and pulls out the Demon, who Tony Schiavone identifies as the man that used to be Dale Torborg. He used to be a man. He's morphed. Vampiro comes down. Jeff Jarrett comes down, along with security. Vampiro and the Demon are now in the ring, along with the Great Muta, who beat down on Sting. Jarrett then attacks Booker with chair shots. Then Booker, all of a sudden, like a noose, comes down from the ceiling, and Jeff Jarrett ties up Booker's bad leg to this noose from the ceiling and hangs him upside down in the aisleway. Then they put Sting...
An ankle hanging.
An ankle hanging as... They then, a giant demon coffin appears at the entranceway. Sting's lifeless body is thrown into the demon's coffin. It closes. The demon now has a flame torch, blows the fire onto the coffin, which now engulfs the coffin with fire. Tony Schiavone, sensing that the man is going to be burnt to a crisp again, yells out, "The coffin's on fire! The coffin's on fire!" We cut to Jeff Jarrett with a guitar who blasts it onto Booker's knee. Schiavone sells this as fatal. Sells the knee injury worse than the man who's just been engulfed in flames again in as many as 2 months as we go off the air. I fell out of my chair and was unconscious from Monday Nitro. Oh my God, Way. I felt like I just watched a goddamn F1 race from the pit. My head was just spinning into the galaxy.
Yeah.
I can't, no words.
Yeah, I don't even know how people feel that even after like hearing us talk about the show, but this just, like, it leaves me with such an awkward body feeling. Like, it's giving me the shakes, you know? Like, I have all this, like, pent-up energy that I want to I just want to smash things with afterwards.
Like a guitar?
Anything. But I'm just so demoralized and tired that I can't even get up to do anything but sit. But I want to do so much, but I can't. But I want to, but I can't.
This is the easiest rating I've ever given a show in all of our reviews. It gets a 0 out of 10. I am confident in saying this was among, if not the worst pro wrestling television show I've watched. I'm confident in standing behind July 31st, 2000. When I get into future arguments, this will be my go-to. I will ask, do you remember the July 31st, 2000 edition of Nitro? It was the Viagra on a pole match, and it ended with the words, "The coffin's on fire, the coffin's on fire."
Yeah. I'll give it a 10 out of 10.
No.
Because I can't...
Either is acceptable.
I can't say I wasn't entertained. What's notable about the show is that there was not one average segment here. There's not one normal pro wrestling program segment here. Every segment featured an atrocity of some sort. So this is the type of show that would just be, let me just shake it all out. This was the type of show that would be a lot of fun to watch with your friends, intoxicated or not, but probably better intoxicated. And you know what? You might have fun.
This is one show way we should have reviewed in real time with alcohol.
Okay, maybe.
This should have been like the anniversary special.
Oh, this would have been totally up there with the China porn. It would have been totally made me.
This was wrestling porn, the equivalent.
Oh yeah, definitely. But about as you couldn't try to write a worse pro wrestling show if you blatantly tried to. Like this was just one of the worst, but therefore one of the best pro wrestling shows I've ever seen.
Boy, Monday Nitro 2000. What a time period. Cherish it when it comes to the network.
Well, if it ever comes out. Oh man. Ugh. Oh man, I feel like I'm running some laps after this. I just got to do something. I got to get rid of this excess energy out of my body.
Well, let's run some laps on the message board.
I'm being possessed by the kiss demon.
Oh, he used to be the man, Wei Ting. He used to be a man. Let's go to Gideon from Maryland. This was your typical Vince Russo-written episode of Monday Nitro. Stipulation matches, constant backstage segments, wrestlers using insider terminology, and shots of talent arriving late to work are a few of the many Russo-isms featured on the show. It seems not only does Vinny Roo have a fetish for poles, he has one for tardiness as well. The show isn't the worst in the world by any means. I disagree. But it's still pretty poor and pales in comparison to the quality of show WWF was putting on at the time. My favorite moment of the show was Canyon Diamond cutting Mean Gene. The camera had to pan away so frail old Gene didn't have to bump. I give this episode of Nitro a 3 out of 10 with 1 point deducted for Mark Madden's horrendous commentary.
Okay. We go to Chris in Ottawa who says, I'd forgotten about Booker T's original wife, LaVestia. A quick internet search, I found that they divorced in May 2001 and he would marry his girlfriend 5 years later, Charmel. And they tried to make it seem like LaVestia was unhappy when Booker T said that Jeff Jarrett had to kill him to get the belt off of him. But every time they cut to LaVestia, she had the same blank, expressionless look on her face. I'm glad they got divorced. She was so green. Guys, this show was so shitty. The Artist Purple Rain ripoff was shitty. Sting's matching chair and love seat backstage were so shitty. And Lance Storm's slipped on the shitty logo on the mat that they would remove soon after this. This show was perfect in its shittiness. I give it a 10 out of 10.
Jeremy in Texas, I'm pretty sure I watched every Nitro, but I definitely didn't remember this show. I'm the exact same. I know I watched this and still couldn't remember this watching it. It wasn't a bad show, but it wasn't good either. I'd forgotten what a Vince Russo show was like, but boy, oh boy, was I reminded from the get-go. Not a fan of violence against women, and it happened twice in this show with Jarrett's guitar and a Nash powerbomb. I've never been a fan of involving moms in wrestling storylines, and hearing Judy Bagwell talk was like nails on a chalkboard. Why would you ever put a headset on that woman? Lance Storm was an underrated performer, and I'd forgotten he'd held three titles at once in WCW. Too bad they made him look weak when Nash came out and essentially bitch-slapped him. I liked the three-way tag match and the surprise finish. I was swerved. Thanks, Russo. I couldn't believe how quickly thrown together the straitjacket and Viagra on a pole matches were. Just bizarre booking. Thanks, Russo. And of course, in typical Russo fashion, a big angle to end the show. 3 little blue diamonds out of 10. Yeah, we should mention, from setup of the Viagra on a pole match to the entrance was about 90 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
It was going to a commercial break and coming back with the match was the setup.
Uh-huh. Well,
Skim this one.
We go to the next. I'm trying to read this guy's name. Whatever. I don't know what was worse, the blur of the show I just watched or the endless silent edits from guys saying things they shouldn't. So much was thrown out in this episode, and it had little to no effect by the end. So many angles and stipulation matches in one show. It was insane to me that with 30 minutes to go, they ran through 4 more matches for the night. I will give WCW some credit, though. They really tried to make Booker the man in the company, but I don't think it took. I also loved the Lance Storm push at this stage, although it had the typical Nash squashing it for no reason that WCW was famous for. I'll also join the general consensus of Mark Madden as dreadful and shouldn't be anywhere near wrestling.
Derek from Denton, Texas. Holy shit, this show was something, and I actually enjoyed it for the most part. I was kind of happy seeing Double J hit Booker's wife with the guitar, even though it is a horrible thing to do. It seemed like most of the matches on this show had someone coming close to fucking up a move, but I will say the Lance Storm match and Sting Jarrett were good. For me, Scott Steiner stole the show with his insane rambling promos and assaulting people in the backstage area for no damn reason. It also seemed like none of the wrestlers gave a fuck about trying to be too vulgar on television as well. Mark Madden was horrible on commentary, and I was hoping General Rection was going to kick his ass, but he didn't. Masterful train wreck of a show with Scott Steiner being crazy, Sting and Kevin Nash's awesome theme songs, and Jarrett hitting a woman with a guitar. 9 Double J guitar shots out of 10.
Brian from Buffalo. I enjoyed the sheer acting prowess of Booker's wife. What does slappatory mean? Jeff Jarrett hits Booker's wife with the guitar and Booker barely reacts. Judy Bagwell said that she didn't know what a Judy Bagwell on a pole match means. Join the club, Judy. After his match, Buff was so worried about his mom that he is nowhere near her. I love the Mean Gene bump that wasn't, and Mark Madden comparing the Kiwi to Luthez. This guy is worse than present-day Taz. Lance Storm and Mike Awesome were wrestling at New Blood Rising because Storm walked by him in a restaurant. Kevin Nash comes out and Tony Schiavone says, "Here comes America." Nash then proceeds to say he isn't a wrestler. It's about time he agrees with the rest of us. He says he is going to literally kill Goldberg in the ring and then requests a match with Scott Steiner in which someone is going to die.
That's a pretty good recap. Rich in Winnipeg. Gentlemen, it's been a couple of years since I left feedback, but boy, did I pick a doozy of a show to leave. From the fast 10 bell count for Gordon Soley to how quick the edits were from backstage to wrestling and back again to the shutter Viagra on a pole match, we were in Russo territory, all right. I had forgotten Booker had a first wife, though let's face it, her talent in front of the camera was not as good as Charmel's would be in WWE. By the way, what was with Russo's obsession with pole matches? If this continued, we would have seen a pole on a pole match. The three-way tag match and Lance Storm was great, but the use of shit on the hardcore title was very childish. And of course, for the main event, we get run-in after run-in with Jarrett and Vampiro. As we saw, this was the lead-up to the end of WCW, but watching this brought back a strange wave of nostalgia. Not that we want to go back to unprotected chair shots. I give this one 4.5 out of 10.
Of all things,
this show was a chair shot to the head.
Of all things to pick out for being childish.
We can't go back to that. This atrocity.
The title. Daylon from Michigan. I never missed an episode of WCW or WWE at this time. I hated WCW so much by 2000, but Vince Russo's second run as WCW booker was never boring. This episode had its ups and downs. Lance's promo was entertaining. Renaming the hardcore title the World Canadian Wrestling... renaming the hardcore title and the World Canadian Wrestling line was awesome.
The Viagra on a pole match was pretty good. Two good workers who did the best they could considering the creative stipulation. Jarrett again, honestly, how many segments was he in? By the time the demon showed up, my head was spinning. WCW 2000 at its finest.
Go to Matt from Burlington. Just a few things before I pass out. The commentary was terrible, specifically the Viagra on a pole match. Lance Storm is the only saving grace for me, at least. Main event was okay until the gong show started. Oh, great. The demon. And now a coffin is on fire. Can't remember. A lot else happened. I give this 3 Purple Rain entrances out of 10.
Paul from the UK. I'm just about 5 minutes in, and there's so much to talk about. I'm just going to leave feedback on this beginning. I would not be surprised if your review goes 2 hours plus based on just the start. Let's see. Booker appearing from behind an automatic door with such timing that it is laughable rather than cool. Booker parking his car like an asshole. Booker looking about 20 years older than he looks now in 2014 with the mustache. Instead of using his actual wife, Charmel, who is actually... They use a... No.
No.
That was his actual wife.
Pre-wife.
Booker might have had more garish shirts than Rock at this time, something which I thought was impossible. Why Sting was wearing a mask at first, I have no idea. Canyon cutting should never be used as a verb. And F off Mark Madden.
And finally, Michael from Idaho Falls. As an unabashed WCW fan who watched every episode until its demise and who has never forgiven Vince McMahon for destroying the invasion and what should have been the greatest storyline in wrestling history... I was ashamed to watch this show. I have always looked back on the early Vince Russo days as charming, but by this time it was just dreadful. The Cat, who was actually one of my favorite characters at the time, gave us gimmick match after gimmick match. What object wasn't used in a wrestling match during this time period? There was a few bright spots, though. The Lance Storm hat trick title storyline was interesting and would be followed up by a really good world title match with Booker T the next week on Nitro, and the Sting Booker match told a good story, but was destroyed by an awful ending. I never thought anything could be worse than a Viagra on a pole match, but a burning coffin combined with Booker T being hung by his foot only to be hit by a balsa wood guitar was perhaps the stupidest thing I've ever seen. This makes TNA not look so bad now, doesn't it? I give this show a 0 out of 10. Michael from Idaho Falls, ending on a strong note. He began that with, as an unabashed WCW fan. Sometimes we don't have to be at odds over the quality of a show. Sometimes we can just be in unison.
Oh, yeah. No, it's hard to argue, you know? I didn't expect something like this to be... I mean, I thought it would just be a standard Nitro, to be honest with you.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, well, this was quite memorable, I'll say.
Wait, you are so disgusted by this show.
No, I swear. Like, I feel like I've just taken, like, bad medication or something. Like, I just feel weird. I feel physically off, you know?
Maybe you need to take a week off.
Yeah, I think I do. I'm not going to be here this week.
Is it true? You have suffered some burns during this review. And yeah. You're going to have to come back in 2 weeks and unbandage yourself and show zero effects. Of these burns.
Burn, a 40-foot fall. I think I'm going to take a vacation.
You deserve it. So next week, you're leaving.
Yeah, I'm not going to be here. I'm going to go to California next
week. That's unreal. So I'm going to have to do a review all by myself.
Oh, you can. Well, I suggest you get a guest host.
Well, I have.
Oh.
I do have a
what?
Guest.
What? Already? In the 2 seconds that I just
telepathically contacted our good pal, Alex Greenfield, who's going to join me for the entire show next week. And we're going to review. This will be fun because we've never reviewed a show from start to finish with someone who was one of the key contributors to it. We are going to review the WWE No Mercy 2005 pay-per-view, which was one that Alex has wanted to review for quite some time. And for feedback next week, I would prefer we can get some of your quick thoughts on the show, but more I want to get questions for Alex because he was directly involved as the lead writer on, I believe he was a lead writer by this point. If not, he was up the food chain at this point, writing SmackDown. So we'll take questions for Alex next week, and he's going to sit in for the whole show. We're going to go match by match. This was the show headlined by Batista and Eddie Guerrero for the world title at the time. So that will be the review next week as Wei Ting gets a much-deserved vacation. A work vacation, nonetheless, but vacation still.
I'm very much looking forward to that. It'll be like a director's commentary.
Are you going to listen?
Of course I am.
Okay.
Well, that's going to be next week's review. So we'll put the thread up later this week. Of course, you can watch No Mercy 2005 on the WWE Network. Don't mistakenly watch another No Mercy, because there's quite a lot of them. I believe 9 to believe, in fact. A lot of No Mercies.
Yeah.
So, Wade, we'll chat with you when? Maybe never.
Thursday. Friday, I mean.
Oh, yeah. You're not leaving yet.
Yeah.
So, Wade will be back this week with Review and Impact. No better way to get ready for a vacation than watching some TNA. The first set of New York tapings this week.
Yeah, sure. Yes.
All right. So, that's going to wrap us up. I'm just in a state of disbelief right now. I need to calm myself down from this review. You can go download The Law from Sunday night. A bunch of guests on the show, including Ric Flair, Crime Time, Ian Uncle Creepy McCall, and Dave Meltzer. Plus, we have Review of Raw from Monday night, discussing the Sting deal, discussing Battleground. You're going to watch Battleground? Oh, no, you're gone by Sunday, so no Battleground for Way.
Oh, shit.
Damn it. And then later this week, we'll be back with Bauer and Pollock Wednesday night, Review and Impact Thursday night, What's Next on Friday, and then, of course, The Law Sunday, right after Battleground, where you can share all your thoughts on the WWE special.
Great.
Sounds like a great week ahead.
Yeah, man. No, it does. It really does.
All right.
I'm just out of it.
I don't want to end with a song this week. I want to end with the final couple of minutes from Monday Nitro, because there's no better way to end this. The panic that has overtaken Tony Schiavone's body as all of these problems come to a head in the arena involving Booker T, Sting, Jeff Jarrett, Vampiro, Great Muda, and the non-human demon.
Ooh.
Who is that? It's the demon!
The demon!
The demon under the ring, Drag Sting took him out of the matchup. He cost Sting the World Heavyweight Championship.
The disciple of that freak, that nut Vampiro, the man that will face Sting coming up at New Blood Rising. And Sting is not done with the demon. The man who used to be Dale Torborg, used to be a man. And all speaking of the freak, here he comes.
Hey, hey, the brothers in pain, get it right.
Yeah, as Mike Tenay said, the freaks in pain is what they are.
Sting just can't get Vampiro to go away.
Vampiro's
wearing the old Sting makeup.
And look at the
gentleman, that's Jeff Jarrett.
Jarrett is back. He's back in this program with carnage going on everywhere.
Jeff Jarrett was in the hospital. We saw him cordon off earlier on. Or did we?
I don't know. That's what Terry Taylor told Booker T back there. Look at Jarrett. He's got the chair. Jeff Jarrett, where's he going? He's going to Booker T.
No, no.
He could not survive many of those after the match he just had.
How much more can Booker T take? He's going to take a little more right now. In fact, welcome to Slapnuts Boulevard, Booker. See you at New Blood Rising, champ.
It's 4-on-2, and there's no way Sting, there's no way Booker T can combat the odds here.
I can't wait for New Blood Rising. I can't wait for the Chosen One to get his gold back. Jarrett has attacked and hospitalized Booker T's wife. And now Sting.
Sting on his knees. No fight left at all.
Anyone have any idea what Jeff Jarrett just did? We're what?
I don't know what's going on.
What in the world?
What's he doing?
Oh, this is some kind of knee therapy for Booker, I bet. He's helping him out.
What he's going to try to do is tear out the knee here.
Is he going to hang it by his knee?
Oh, he can't do that.
No.
He's going to tear. That's going to be a Booker T. He's not going to be able to walk.
No.
He's not going to be able to walk tomorrow, much less do that. No, he can't do this.
No, come on.
My God, no.
That knee has taken so much abuse.
Look, Sting has been put in the demon's coffin. He's been put in the demon's coffin. His Booker T is helpless. And right now, just unbearable pain. And the demon's got, he's got the flame. What's he going to do?
Sting is in that coffin. Booker T is hanging.
Oh, the coffin's on fire. The coffin's on fire. And Booker T is in unbearable pain. Sting and Booker T in one night, their careers could be over. Much less their matches coming up at New Blood Rising.
I got a feeling Mr. Jarrett wants one more at bat.
Oh, no. No.
No, 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 no. Right on the knee. Right on the knee. Booker's knee. Oh, it's going to be like shrimp cocktail.
And fans, we're out of time. This is madness.